Today's Teisho will be on case 68 in the Book of Serenity. Case 68 is entitled Jashan's Swinging the Sword. Introduction. Inside the heartland, the emperor's command. Outside the castle walls, the general's order. Sometimes empowered at the gate, sometimes honored in the room. Tell me, who is this? Case, a monk asked Jashan, how is it when getting rid of the dust to see the Buddha? Jashan said, you should directly swing the sword. If you don't swing the sword, the fisherman stays in the nest. A monk brought this matter up with Shishuang. How is it when getting rid of the dust to see the Buddha? Shishuang said, he has no country. Where will you meet him? The monk returned and quoted this to Jashan. Jashan went up to the hall and said, in the establishment of method and school, he does not compare to me. In profound teaching entering the principle, I am still 100 steps behind Shishuang. Okay. Verse. The star-brushed sword, the army washing weather. Settling disorder, deferring the merit, who else is it? One morning the haze of dust clears over the four seas, robes hanging down, the imperial rule is naturally effortless. Thank you so much for coming to practice Zen this morning, if you are here for the first time today. And for those of you who are here at our Sesshin, thank you so much for your excellent, excellent sitting this morning. Everybody has been coming into the Dokusan room and really presenting powerfully engaged responses. Really wonderful, wonderful. So it's a pure pleasure to practice like this, online and in person, with people who are so dedicated, so committed to practicing in this way. So today's Teisho is maybe a little hard to understand. Let me just go through the koan one more time. Jashan is a Chan master. He's a monk. And a monk said to Master Jashan, basically, tell me about getting rid of the dust so that you can see the Buddha. See, tell me about that. So, you know, in a certain sense, you know, we all have to get rid of the dust. So, you know, on day one and day two of the session, I've been talking about how, in a way, I didn't say it like this, but how when you come to a session, you're covered with red dust, what Chinese Buddhism calls the red dust. So, you know, we come here and we're worried about this and that. You know, maybe something is not going right on our in our jobs, or maybe we have a concern at home. You know, maybe something in a relationship is not going well. Maybe you don't get along with your mother, or your teenage son or daughter is, you know, not a person you recognize anymore, something like that, you know. So all of these are issues that are real problems and have to be addressed. And when you come to Sesshin, you know, they're right there in front of you. You're trying to watch your breath, and every time you try to watch your breath, there is your teenage son, or there is your mother who's angry at you because you haven't called her or something, you know, or something at work. You know, there's that report that somebody has botched and now you have to rewrite it when you get back, and you think, oh, I've got enough work. And so that's the red dust, right? And And it clings to us, and when we come to Sesshin, it takes a few days to get rid of that, right? You know, we do a lot of, you could say, purification, right? You know, we're going into deep mushin, a lot of time spent in emptiness or in the breath. And by day two, many of these problems, which seem so overwhelming, begin to feel more distant. Right, less. It's like they seemed giant, right? They seemed gigantic, and on day two they suddenly seem small, right? Relatively small. And you know, on day three it's like, yeah, I'll get to that later, hopefully, right? You know, so this is actually a process of, you know, putting things into perspective, but also letting go. You know, we would say our problems follow us into Sesshin, but that's not true. We take them into Sesshin. And that includes things that cause us a lot of pain. We bring them to Sesshin, and it's hard to let them go. But, you know, after a couple of days at Sesshin, you begin to let go. You let go of your suffering, even, right? So this idea of the Sesshin as a process of purification is totally correct in a certain sense, in a kind of relative sense, right? And so the question from the monk to Jiashan is, you know, tell me about how we need to get rid of the dust in order to see the Buddha. And Jiashan said, you should directly swing the sword. If you don't swing the sword, you know, the fisherman doesn't go out on the high seas and get a catch, basically. You know, you're like a fisherman who just never leaves the dock, and you just sit there and there's no fish in your tank. So basically, you know, the sword is the sword of Wenshu, of Manjushri. And, you know, when we practice with Mushin, we're swinging Wenshu's sword. So it's interesting, right? If you go to many temples in China, some temples in China, or at least it used to be the case, that there's a Buddha hall where there's a statue of the Buddha, and often he's flanked by bodhisattvas, sometimes Samantabhadra and Manjushri. But in traditional Chinese Buddhism, that Chan Hall didn't have a statue of the Buddha at the front. It had a statue of Wenshu, Manjushri. And you know, basically, some temples are laid out, I'm told, where that most people coming to the temple go to the Buddha Hall. But the meditation hall is often behind the Buddha hall. So it's like you come into the meditation hall and you burn incense outside in the courtyard, and then you can go into the meditation hall and pray or meditate a little bit. But if you really want to practice the way of Chan, you go into the Chan hall, and at the front of the Chan hall is Wenshu. And Wenshu has a sword in his hand, and you could say it's the sword of Mu, right? So when you come to Sesshin and you're upset because maybe somebody at work isn't carrying his weight, you know, and you know, maybe this is a pattern. You know, this is a pattern. This person, you know, is just constantly doing this, right? You know, promising to do something, and then the deadline's coming up, and you go, how's it going? And it's like, well, I'm a little behind, blah, blah, blah. And then you think, oh, God damn it, I have to do this, you know? And then you have to write the damn report, right? Or you give me what you've got, and you look at it, and it's like jumble, and, you know, then you wind up putting in all these extra uncompensated hours, you know, and so on. Well, you come to Sesshin and, you know, on day one, you're feeling really put upon or manipulated by this person, right? And then, you know, you start going into deep mushin, you know, mo, mo. And, you know, all day long you can't put this down at work, this situation at work. And, you know, but second day at work, you know, you're less mad, right? And, you know, maybe even, you know, by the end of the second day or sometime on the third day, you begin to realize that this person is over his head. You know, he's in a job he's not well suited for. Or, you know, maybe he has personal problems that are maybe there's an issue at home, you know. We don't know. You know, maybe the person has a sick spouse, you know, spending so much time taking care of his spouse or taking care of his kids that he can't do a good job, you know. Or maybe he's suffering from depression. You know, it's very hard for when you're depressed to have any motivation at all, right? So you know, we go through a process in the course of a session, you know, where we're unable to get any perspective on this and be compassionate, and then we start swinging Wenshu's sword of Mu, right, of Wu. And, you know, that bastard stuck me with the job again. God damn it, you know, and that's where we start. And then, you know, 2 days later, we realize, you know, even if people are lazy, you know, they're lazy for a reason. You know, laziness doesn't really explain anything. He's just lazy. What does that mean, right? It doesn't mean anything. I mean, lazy can mean depressed. It can mean fearful of failure. You know, it can mean so many things, right? You know, we're unintelligent about it on day one, but by around day three, by swinging Wenshu's sword, we begin to have some clarity about things, you know, and in the process of working through an issue like this, we begin to act with more, you know, suddenly compassion begins to arise. So you know, basically, it's okay to go into the Buddha hall and to worship the Buddha. But a deeper practice by far is to go into the Chan hall and practice, you know, Chan and swing the sword of Wenshu. So when the monk says to Jiashan, "Tell me about clearing the dust," Jiashan says, "Yes, you know, we really have to clear the dust. If you don't swing the sword, you're like a fisherman who doesn't set out on the high seas and bring home the, a refrigerator full of fish." Okay. So then this same monk later goes to another Zen master, Shi Shuang. And he says the same question to Shi Shuang. He says, "How is it when getting rid of dust to see the Buddhas?" Now, Shi Shuang has a different take on this, right? Shi Shuang says something completely different. He says, "The Buddha has no country. Where will you meet him?" See, where will you meet him? And this is like a different. He doesn't say you need to clean up the dust. You know, he's saying in a way, there has never been any dust. There's never been any dust. See. So there's never been any dust. What's to clean up? Or another way to put it is, the Buddha isn't. The Buddha is. Doesn't have to be sought because he's right here. That's another way to put it, you know. So the monk goes back to Jiashan and he says to Jiashan, "You said you have to swing the sword. Shi Shuang said the Buddha has no country. There is no dust, right? Basically." And Jishan hears this, and he goes to the front of the Dharma hall where all of his monks are assembled, and he says, "I'm a very good teacher of Zen, and I run a tight ship you know, and my temple is well organized and people practice diligently. And Shishuang, as an organizer of a temple, can't hold a candle to me, right? So I'm much better at running the temple than Shishuang. But when it comes to insight, Shishuang is so great. He's so great. He's really got it. In this koan, there are echoes of another famous story in Chan, in Zen. You know, the story of Wei Nang and Xian Xiu. You know, Xian Xiu was thought to be the heir to the fifth Dharma ancestor. And he was very literate and learned. And when the fifth Dharma ancestor was going to die, he said, I need to have all of you compose a gatha, an enlightenment poem, and hang it on a pillar in the Dharma hall. And it should reflect your insight into the Dharma. And most of the monks thought Xian Xiu was so superior that they actually, none of them wrote a poem. Only Xian Xiu wrote a poem. And he said, the mind is like a mirror that collects dust and we have to wipe it clean. That was his poem. And if you know the story, Wei Nang was a illiterate woodcutter working in the kitchen in the temple. He wasn't even ordained as a monk. But he was deeply awake and he asked somebody to write for him a poem. And they hung it in the Dharma hall next to Xian Xiu's poem. And it said, you know, basically there is no mirror and there is no dust. From the beginning, not a thing is, see. And the fifth Dharma ancestor saw this and was stunned. Such clarity of perception. You know, what Wei Nang is so great. He's just the greatest. And he had Wei Nang come at night and he said, I'm giving you my robe and my bowl because your insight is so perfectly clear. And now you have to leave the temple. That's another story. But there's echoes of this in this story, this koan. So this is really, I think, something we could benefit from reading many times, this koan, and practicing with. It's so contrary to what we think is the case. You know, this idea that let me give you some examples of what I think is at work in this koan. You know, some of you know I mentioned earlier that my wife has been in the hospital, was in the hospital for a week, a month ago, to have a non-malignant tumor removed from her brain. And she's doing really well. She's really, really doing well. They released her early because she's doing so well. They let her go from the hospital early. She didn't have to be in a rehab, so that she came right home. And, you know, she's doing really well. And, you know, unfortunately, she gets tired and, you know, she doesn't really have especially the first couple of weeks, she didn't have the mental, like, focus to, like, do a lot of reading. And I got some books she can listen to books, you know, but that was, so anyway, she was watching TV, unfortunately, a lot. And she was watching, she has fallen in love with the John Wick movies. I don't know if you know of these, but they're astonishing, right? They're just like astonishing, right? Because these are hugely popular. And John Wick is a contract killer, right? And basically, some other contract killers murder his wife and kill his dog or something. I haven't seen them all. But at any rate, he has to get revenge, right? And he angers, you know, there are various reasons for him to be in danger. But, you know, basically he's done an injury, he's done wrong, and he sets things to rights, and then there are all these repercussions. Everybody wants to kill him. All these highly skilled contract killers are trying to kill him, and he's a highly skilled contract killer. And it's just like nonstop violence, right? So I said to Barbara, I don't think this is very good for you, you know? I'm not sure this is what you should be looking at as you're recovering. You know, this doesn't seem like the best is, you know. But these are so popular, danger at every turn. And, you know, he gets, you know, the hell knocked out of him every movie, right? Just, you know, he gets stabbed, shot, beaten, and he triumphs over all these odds, right? But it's just like he has to wade through violence. It's like practically every frame is like violent, right? And, you know, the people love this, right? And I don't know... my wife is also a fan of the Mission Impossible series, right? And it's not so different, right? You know, Ethan, Tom Cruise, has to do an impossible mission, and something goes wrong, and the odds are against him, and you know he has to jump out of buildings onto helicopters and trains and. And, you know, he's a little like John Wick. You know, he almost gets killed again and again. You know, any normal person would just say, kill me, get it over with, right? But not Ethan, not John Wick. They just have this persistence, right? And I think it's, there are many messages in the movies, but I think one of the messages is that, you know, heroic people don't give up no matter what. They continuously struggle until they see things through, right? So I think that's why these are so popular. They're saying you are a hero like John Wick or like Ethan. You know, you have to get up every day and you have impossible odds that challenge you. And, you know, a normal person would give up, but you can't give up. You just keep fighting through to the resolution, right? Fight, fight, fight. And, you know, if you think about it, life has a dimension of being like this, right? I mean, I've been in situations where everything was going wrong, right? I remember... we had this special program that I had helped to set up, and we needed these books. This was early in my career. It was a special program at my university, and we needed these books, and they weren't ready at the time the special program was happening. These were like students arriving at Rutgers from the greater tri-state area, and it was a grant-funded program, and these books were absolutely crucial. And I called the publisher and I said, so where are the books? You know, we can't. This is absolute. And they said, well, they're down in Maryland, right? They said, where are the actual books? They're down in Maryland. You know, we can get them to you in a week or so. And I said, we cannot do that. I said, what if I actually pick them up? And they said, well, you could probably do that. So I actually did drive down to Maryland to get the books. And, you know, it was just like traffic and, you know, I'm trying to get there before the warehouse closes. And this actually happened. And, you know, I didn't know the area well. I had to go through the Chesapeake Bay Tunnel, right? You know, and... this is before Easy Pass, you know, so you have to go through all, you have to make sure you have enough change to go through all the tolls and everything. And if you run out, that's a problem, right? And you, So it was just like this nightmare. And, you know, I got the books and I brought them back. And, you know, it was like, done. You know, I did it. So it was a lot like a John Wick thing. You just had to fight, fight, fight. And I've had lots of other situations like that, right? Where, so, you know, this is like a mindset, right? This is like a mindset. You know, you fight, 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 and you see it through, even though there are all these things that, these obstacles, people keep trying to kill you. You know, maybe not literally, but events keep trying to block you or kill you, right? And this is like something I think that people, if I'm very inspiring, right? It's like very inspiring to be a hero, to fight your way through to success, right? But if you think about it, you know, that takes a real, it has a distorting effect on the way we live our lives, right? And it may not guarantee success at all, actually, right? I think the John Wick movies, for somebody like me who is not part of the John Wick world and I never played a video game in my life. You know, when I looked at those movies, I was literally like speechless at how violent they were. And it's kind of what people take for granted now, I guess, you know. And the movies are like huge. Even the critics, you know, they give them like 5 stars. This is great, you know, this is even better than the last one. But I think if you're stepping out of our culture, you can say this is really not a healthy mentality, right? The fight, fight, fight. Every event becomes a potential danger or risk and a threat and a foe. And there are allies. There are people, they're very rare, but we do have allies in the world who help us fight off our enemies, right? And, you know, people, if I try to talk to people about this, they always say, oh, it's just a movie, lighten up, lighten up. But it's actually expressing widely held values, you know. And I think it has a destructive impact on people as individuals and on society. Because every event becomes a danger or a risk or a threat, right? Even though we might like to think in these terms about struggle and conflict and winning through to the end, I think that there's a real danger to that way of life, right? I became very interested in a Zen teacher she was the head teacher at the Mount Baldy Zen Center in California. G.U., her Dharma name is G.U., G.U. Kennett. And G.U. Kennett was the first ordained Anglican woman minister in Great Britain. And when she was young, she became really interested in the ministry, you know. And at that time, there were no ordained women. And she said, you know, this is really before feminism. She says, early feminism, right, in the post-war. She said, I have a soul? Don't I have, you know. So she actually won the right to, went to a seminary and completed her studies with like flying colors and was made ordained as an Anglican priest, right? First woman priest, I believe. And she was practicing, and then she got very interested. She read some books on Buddhism. And she became really, really interested in Buddhism. And she actually went to Japan in the post-war period. And, you know, there were very few places for Americans to practice in Japan. My teacher, Webb Roshi, practiced in Japan. Because he spoke fluent Japanese, he was able to make it work at Zanji and also at Myoshinji. Gary Snyder went to Japan and also speaks Japanese pretty well, you know, I'm told. And but it was very difficult for any Americans to train in Japan, and impossible for women. But Jiu Kennett was the kind of woman who didn't take no for an answer, so she actually found a temple and a Roshi who was actually quite supportive of her and said, this is wonderful that you have come here and you want to study the Dharma, the way of Zen. And so he allowed her to become an unsui, a cloud and water trainee. And all the monks, you know, if you know Japanese society, it has many positive aspects, but it continues to be actually a very sexist society, you know, really extraordinary. And it was unacceptable for this white person to be in the temple, and it was also unacceptable for this woman, you know, to be in the temple. And most of the monks were against her from the moment she arrived. And you know, they would mess her up, right? So if she was assigned to rake the gravel outside the temple in the courtyard, you know, the supervising monk would say, rake it like this. You know, and then somebody else would come by and say, this is not right. Who did this? And they'd say, oh, Jiu did that. It's like, oh, Jiu, you know, a woman. You know, what do you expect? And this went on and on, right? You know, so, you know, somebody would say to her, don't worry, I'll wake you up in time for this service at 3:30. They get up at 3:30. And you know, lo and behold, somebody wouldn't wake her up. And she'd come into the service late, you know, getting her robes on, and, you know, people's eyes would roll like, we knew it, you know. And you know, they were constantly sabotaging her. And she went to the Roshi. And, you know, the Roshi could have said, you've just got to fight, you know, fight, 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 you know. But he didn't say that. He said, everything is helping us wake up. Everything that happens is helping us wake up, you know. So whatever the intentions of all of these stupid monks might be, you know, they're actually helping you to wake up. You know, don't worry about their intentions. That's their karma. That's between them and the Buddha, right? That's their karma, those tiny little minds. But your life, you know, put this at the center of your life. Everything is helping me wake up. See? So she started practicing in that spirit, right? Everything is helping me. Whatever your intentions, somebody's intentions don't matter. Even if they're trying to kill you, it doesn't matter. That's their karma. That's their problem. Everything is helping me wake up. Everything is helping me wake up. See? And she practiced in that spirit, right? And she, you know, broke through, had Daikensho, went back to California and started the Mount Baldy Zen Monastery. When she came back to California, the doctor, she got very sick. You know, if you see pictures of her later in her life, she has many physical problems, you know. And she went to the doctor, and the doctor said, oh, you probably have about a year to live, you know. And it's like 25 years later, she died, right? She's that kind of a person, you know. Everything is helping me wake up. Everything is helping me wake up. So, you know, there's a kind of desire to, you know, we have a kind of desire for the fight, fight, fight. You know, when we encounter an obstacle, you know, we want to take the sword out and cut it to pieces. But actually, that's not the Buddha's way, right? That's not the Buddha's way. Everything it is helping me wake up. That's the path, right? And that's really what Shi Shuang felt was most important to tell his students, right? Most important to tell his students. So especially when things are challenging, right? When things are going poorly for us, you know, we fall into that mentality, which is the essence of samsara, right? It's really, as soon as you find yourself struggling, fighting, you know, for an outcome, you're already far from the mark. You're already a million miles away from it, from this. I had a job at the Zen temple in Seattle for a while. People were appointed to be the inji-san, the attendant to the roshi. And when I was the attendant to the roshi, when we would do sesshin, I would make sure that everything was taken care of. You know, if he needed something, I would make sure it was provided for him. We used to, when we were building our temple up in the mountains outside of Seattle, up near Ellensburg, we were living under very primitive conditions. We built the zendo, and then we had tents pitched all over. And every morning, one of the things I would do is go to the spring and get a basin full of water for Genki Roshi so he could wash his face and shave. And I loved doing those things, you know, and it was a great pleasure. He was a wonderful person. And back in Seattle, we had a big social event that we were going to do as a fundraiser. And Genki Roshi was going to do like this. He was really quite a good cook, and he was going to make a multi-course Japanese meal. And all these rich people were going to come, you know, basically, and have a multi-course meal and hopefully write a check to the Seattle Zen Center. And, you know, we wanted everything to be perfect for these people. And, you know, I was just totally freaked out. I was just totally, you know, the stress of this. I was just a kid. You know, I was relatively a kid. You know, I was like 23 or something. And now it seems like a kid. But, you know, I didn't have much worldly experience. And I was stressing out. I thought all these people are going to come and it's got to be perfect. Everything has to be right. Oh, you know. And I was getting so stressed out. And Genki said, you know, this is not the way. He said, you know, basically he said, you're fighting, fighting, fighting. He said, you know, you that's not the way. You know, he said, when you're in that mentality, nothing good is going to come out of that. You know, you're creating your obstacles. You're creating your enemies. See, so John Wick creates his enemies, right? And so you're creating your enemies, and you know, basically the Chinese have this idea, this wu wei, you know, try but then let go, right? Wu wei, try but let go. This is very wise, right? If you don't try, nothing happens. If you don't get on the, you don't come to sesshin, you know, nothing happens, right? You know, so if you practice every day and you come to sesshin, but you can't make things happen. And when you try to make things happen, you make things your enemy, right? instead of your ally. Everything is your ally. Even the people who want to kill you are your allies in this process of waking up, you know, complete enlightenment. Right. So I did try to chill, you know, I tried to take it easier, you know, and not, you know, when you, I can't say I was 100% successful, but at least I didn't have a total meltdown, right? But, you know, Genki used to throw pots in the basement. You know, he was a ceramicist and used to do tea bowls, not pots, you know. And he would be, sometimes we'd go to Kugeyan and he would be down in the basement throwing pots and we'd say, you know, Roshi, you know, Genki-san. And he'd take off this brown robe he wore, and he'd put on his blue robes and come up. And you know, when you throw pots, you can't control the situation, right? Everyone, he did a whole bunch of incense bowls once, and they're all different. You know, he wasn't striving to have every bowl the same. It's like each time you throw the bowl, it's going to be a different bowl. You know, they're similar. They're incense bowls. They all look kind of the same, but they're all different, you know, and you're not trying to get the same result each time. And that's, I think, the secret of Zen practice, you know. And also, like, this, I think it's a good secret for life, right? It's everything is my ally. You know, when you're having trouble, so-called, with your koan, your big mind is trying to show you something. It's trying to open a door that you don't even know is there yet. And if you're too busy fighting, you don't even notice that you're holding the door closed, right? A monk asks Jiashan, how is it when getting rid of the dust to see the Buddha? Jiashan said, you should directly swing the sword. If you don't swing the sword, the fisherman stays in the nest. The monk brought it up to ask Shishuang, how is it when getting rid of dust to see the Buddha? Shishuang said, the Buddha has no country. Where will you meet him? The monk returned and quoted this to Jiashan. Jiashan went up to the head of the hall and said, in the establishment of method and school, Shishuang does not compare to me, but in profound teaching, entering the principle of the Dharma, I am 100 steps behind Shishuang. Verse, the star brushing sword, the army washing weather, settling disorder, deferring the merit, who else is it? See, it's like the army is coming, they're going to fight, but then the rain comes and it makes the mud, you know, it makes the ground turn to mud, makes it impassable. You can't bring your chariots and your horses in the mud. So it's like the army's going to fight, but then the rain comes and then everybody's just peaceful in the rain, right? So it's like, there's like they had their plan, but their plan didn't work out, right? You know, there's something more powerful even than armies. One morning, the haze of dust clears over the four seas. Robes hanging down, the imperial rule is naturally effortless. It's like, it's not, fight is not the way, you know. There's a natural unfolding to events, and you know, basically you harmonize yourself with things by treating everything as your ally, and lo and behold, everything becomes your ally. So please keep making everything your ally in your wonderful practice today.